This is an interview with Ruby Slipperjack, recorded at her home in Thunder Bay on December 16th, 1990. I hope this guy doesn't die on me.
Oh, okay.
You keep that.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Thanks. Okay.
Yeah. Have you heard of him, Joe Bruchet? He publishes, he edits also a lot of, he's a native person, and he edits a lot of poetry and writes poetry himself. Mm. He's got an outfit in New York State called the Greenfield Center, Greenfield Review Press, and he's put out quite a few books. Mm. He's a good storyteller. He came over to Germany once and he actually got some German students to sing along with him, and I've never seen that before, so he must be really good. What I'd like to ask you would be how you got started writing.
I think we talked about this one time.
That's true.
What we used to do, I remember the trapper's shack where we were all born and raised. And it was just, you know, storytelling in the evening when there was nothing else to do. So it was someone would start, you know, telling a story. Sometimes it was legends or whatever it was. If it was my brother or my father coming home, it would be a hunting story. Anyway, someone was always telling a story. If you're walking along, someone tells a story, you know. Mm-hmm. So that, anyway, I guess I missed that. I don't know. The more I think about it, did it have something to do with me going away to go to residential school? Mm-hmm. I was 11, 12 years old. I had no one to share my stories with anymore.
Mm-hmm.
There was no one to tell me stories, but I started writing.
You once told me that you...
Okay, this is the writing itself. I was writing to write.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, this is different than what I was doing in school, in the classroom. And that was the lack of written... You know, the stories to read. It was all we had was fun Dick and Jane, and some of the readers that we had in school. And most of them, I really got off on the pictures of the little animals with the little jackets and coats on. But other than that, I was just flipping through pages. There were no, the stories weren't. I had nothing to identify with, the stories that we had, with the fun Dick and Jane. I was on my way home one time, huh? Now, there's a minister's house halfway home. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I ran into the minister's outhouse, and we always had a box of rags at our outhouse, but this place had nothing. And the only thing that was there was a paperback. Of course, I didn't know what it was. I never paid much attention to what it... Anyway, I picked that up and I started flipping through the page. Hey, there's a story here. And I start reading like crazy. And of course, I'd have to peek out, you know, once in a while, make sure that minister wasn't coming in. Reading as fast as I can. Anyway, towards the end there, turn the page, and the whole back section had been ripped off. Oh, I could have gone in there and trolled that old minister. I never knew the ending to that book, and that plagued me.
And how old were you then, about?
Oh, jeez, I don't know. 8, 10?
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere along there. Anyway, so that's when I started scrounging around. I had to resolve in my mind an ending to this book, because I wasn't about to go in and ask the minister how this book ended, and even know I was in there, right? Anyway, I got a pencil from school. We weren't supposed to take papers or pencils out of the schoolroom. Of course, there was no such things at home. Mm-hmm. And I remember peeling off, I don't know what it was, the sugar bag? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wrote the ending to that book myself on that sugar bag. Yeah. Well, anyway, that was the very first time I came across something that, you know, the idea that you can actually write a story in a book form.
And you kept it up after that?
Yeah, off and on. Off and on when I felt like writing, you know, it's just the need to tell stories. And that too, I used to drive my mother crazy. She never knew if I was telling the truth or whether I was making up a story again. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I think that's where it started. I just wrote here and there, wrote on anything I could get my hands on. Mm-hmm. But most of everything I wrote went in the fire, otherwise somebody would find it and read it, right? Mm-hmm. So when I left home, when I went to residential school, then to the boarding school after that, that was just my form of entertainment, I guess.
Did you go together with any of your brothers and sisters?
No.
No? All by yourself?
There was one sister in St. Marie, but she was in high school, so I mm-hmm. saw her on weekends. Mm-hmm. And that was only for the first 4 months, and then we were quarantined at Christmas. Someone in the residential school came up with German measles. Mm-hmm. Anyway, for whatever reason, we were quarantined. We could not go home.
You call them German measles. We just call them Masern, which is
Oh, is that right? Anyway, that's what they're called. So we couldn't go home. Oh, I remember that. So that was when she went home. Mm-hmm. I never saw her again till spring. They let us out in the spring.
So you were only home over the summer months?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And how long did you go to school? To which grade?
To, residential mm-hmm. school. Mm-hmm. If that was the last year it was open. It was closed the following year, and that's when we came here to Thunder Bay. Mm-hmm. I didn't see all the people that I knew in St. Mary, so we must have scattered all mm-hmm. over. They mm-hmm. sent us to different places. But most of the kids back home, the ones that were coming to school, we all ended up here in Thunder Bay.
And that was a boarding
and
school?
It was a boarding home. No, mm-hmm. these are boarding in non-school
homes.
Oh,
I see. So it was a public school?
We went to the regular school, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I remember moving at least 3-4 times a year, just from one home to another.
Why that?
I don't know why. Maybe the landladies didn't want or to change their minds in one case.
Mm-hmm. Were they non-native people?
They were all non-native people. Some of them were really nice. Some of them tried to accommodate our, mm-hmm. our different backgrounds. Mm-hmm. But others, you can mm-hmm. you knew right away, you know, they were just there for the money.
Yeah.
So you felt like you were intruding, didn't feel at home.
Were you the only native kid in there, or did they take in several students?
Yeah, they took in several students, and sometimes we didn't know each other. Mm-hmm. So there were sometimes there were about five, six mm-hmm. students. Mm-hmm.
So it was boarding homes, and they did that to create some money, right, for themselves.
Mostly. Some of them.
Yeah. Okay.
But there are others that actually tried to go out of their way to make us feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. I remember this one lady, she thought, well, native people, they eat fish. Mm-hmm. So she served us fish, and we couldn't eat it because it was cod.
Oh.
Salt water fish. I to this day I cannot eat saltwater fish. I'm a fresh fish eater. We were just looking at each other. What are we going to do? Close your nose and swallow as fast as you can. And,
You, I think you once told me that when you were little, your mother made you napkin dolls and stuff.
Oh yeah.
So was that like? Would you say you received a training in storytelling that way?
No, it was. Now I wouldn't call it a training in story because it was, it's something that you pick up. It's the same thing as the sewing. You're expected to know that. You know, it's just a form of entertainment. And I'll show you what those things look like.
Mm-hmm.
Needle hunting. That's another thing we used to do. I remember sitting. We used to sit around on the floor, and someone would get a pin or a needle, and then everybody closes their eyes, and someone puts. Hides the needle, right? And I used to keep us entertained for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you can't move because you know the pin is somewhere. Everybody searches around you. So these are some of the activities, but the storytelling, yes, it was always someone telling a story.
Yeah. So would your, if your mother made you these characters, would they sort of stay like this? Or would you make them up again and again?
No, she didn't sit there and you were expected to know how to, you know, how to fold these things
up. Oh, I
up.
See. Mm-hmm. Oh, you don't have to undo it now.
Anyway, it's, we just told stories.
Mm-hmm. Okay, coming back to the school, so you went to school here in Thunder Bay?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And would you then be able to go home in the summer?
Yes, they took us home Christmas time. We went home
Christmas.
At Christmas
uh-huh,
time. Uh-huh. Yeah, because then at that time we were teenagers now, and that was a big deal for us to go home Christmas. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You always insist that Honor the Sun is not autobiographical, and I guess you get a lot
I
of questions sort of going into that.
Because I can't say that it's all true because it's not.
No.
You know, and some of the things that are in there were taken. You know, out of sequence, or or sometimes it's something that just recently happened, maybe mentioned in there as that being at that time period. But it's, you know, when you're writing, it's things that pop into your head, you know, that you do put in there.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It is a part of me.
Sure.
And I think when you look at it, it's a part of everybody else, because that's one thing we all have in common, is that we were all children at one point.
So
we all feel at certain points in our childhood, I remember doing that, or I remember feeling like that. You know?
That's exactly also the reaction that I got from, that's my own reaction to the book, and I got that from a lot of students too, and regardless of what their background was.
Yeah.
This one student, she said, "Oh, this is so wonderful. It's exactly, I remember things now that I've forgotten."
That's
you
right.
know? And so it's a lot of basic experiences that children have, the way they play, the way they see the minute little details that we are very often too busy to actually pay attention to.
You know what I liken it to? When you're children, little children, they have invisible playmates.
Yeah.
I mean, if you, to them, they're not invisible. They can describe this thing that they're playing with, or they can describe this little person that they're playing with. They'll tell you what, you know, what color of clothes old man Jimmy here is wearing today, you know?
Yeah.
But somehow, when we're, as we grow older, we learn that this is not acceptable.
Yeah.
That we can't do this anymore. But who are these people that are telling us? It's the adults who have been blind, who are now blind, that the child sees clearly.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know what I'm getting at?
Yeah.
And it's the same thing. If the things that we lose in our childhood because we've been blinded by, you know, as we get older, we go, our vision goes, our internal vision.
Well, we're brainwashed into perceiving reality as whatever we can touch. No?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when you read something, you remember, it jogs your memory. And then that's when, yeah, now I remember, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, all these little details come back. But you need that person there. You need the I don't know, what else? How best? if I could speak Indian, I would tell you exactly. What I'm getting at is when one person starts talking, then you begin to, when your mind is set, when you're in the same frame of mind as the other person, then you start clicking, then you start to understand, and your mind opens up, and you know, you will understand what you're reading, because the words themselves are just words written down. When you start reading and understanding between the lines, that's when you know you're in the same wavelength, or you're in the same communication. And that's I think that's all it is. It's just learning to.
You just said if you could speak in, I guess, Ojibwe.
Yeah.
It would be much easier to explain. I guess, well, that's your first language, so English is a second language for you too. But you write in English, and you write so well. Is that, do you feel that if you speak English, you have a harder time than writing?
When I'm speaking English, I'm fine on a level, conversation level. Mm-hmm. But when I'm trying to explain something that's more personal, something more intense,
then you've got to use a
language
of
the heart. Then I would rather I do it in a native language, because maybe one, two words will explain what I'm trying to explain in English. So I'm blue in the face. I can't get that right. Feeling. And that drove me crazy, because that character, the owl, she's a native girl set in a native environment, native home. So the conversation is all in the native language.
Yeah,
there are some things in their expressions, like a shrug of the shoulder can mean so much. Mm-hmm. How do you put that into writing?